The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO James Hickman and CFO Judy Happer of Finsetta, a fast-growing international payments and Forex platform serving high-net-worth individuals and small, medium-sized enterprises. So welcome, guys.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah, well, big congrats on this morning's strong top-line growth, with sales increasing 16% to 5.9 million pounds. But obviously we've had a bit of sort of disruption and geopolitical uncertainty caused by Liberation Day tariffs from out in the States with President Trump. So maybe you can start there, James, and I suppose you could just quickly take the audience through the sort of key puts and takes in that first half.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you quite rightly pointed out, there's been certain challenges. I mean, what's gone well for us in terms of execution against strategy, our Dubai office now is fully operational. And in fact, we have 9 people there trading ahead of our expectations and gone really, really well. So we're just to remind everyone, we're now fully regulated by the DFSA under a Cat 3D license, allowing us to provide payment services in the UAE. That has gone really, really well. And we've identified and now integrating with a local banking partner, which actually will set us apart. Very few have that. And that will allow us to offer the same service as we do here in the UK. And that will be very unusual and a real USP for us. And will only accelerate growth out there. Canada as well. We're now generating revenue. We're fully operational there as well. We've already integrated with a local banking partner, again, to be able to provide exactly the same service as here in the UK, and it always was going to be a much sort of smaller business and slower business than the UAE. I'm delighted with progress there as well. And we're now starting to add more sales capability. That's performing very well.
Yeah. And just as a reminder for sort of like investors, what are the sort of the key sort of USPs that Finsetta offer sort of the high net worth individuals and small businesses, as opposed to, say, the poster child of the industry? Why is
the USP for us is very much around technology platform backed with service, and the service aspect for our business is very, very important, given our higher than average transaction sizes. So we're dealing with corporates and high net worth individuals. The service aspect is hugely important. So whilst we've got a fantastic platform, and you know, if you want no human interaction at all, we can certainly service that. But actually, most of our clients really value the service aspect of it. And each and every client, whether you're an individual or a business, receives a dedicated account manager that you can call on at any time to ask questions, resolve any issues, or literally just commentary around the currency market. So that is absolutely critical for our client base.
Yeah, so if I was a high net worth individual wanting to buy an overseas property, holiday home, maybe in Spain or Portugal or something like that, rather than just dumping a bunch of money into Wise and not really knowing which currency I need to pay it, you'd give me advice, would you, in terms of specifically how to make sure that's done efficiently and safely?
Exactly right. And assuming for most people, they're not buying houses overseas on a daily basis. So quite often it's, you know, a one-time occurrence, or you know, it might be the first or second time they've done it. They do need that sort of assurance that everything will go smoothly, and that's exactly what we provide.
Good. Okay, brilliant. Well, if we could now move to the numbers there, Judy, if you could take us through sort of the key financial highlights, maybe the sort of the service mix and gross margins and profitability and cash.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Paul. I'll do my kind of normal walk down the income statement. So just imagine it's there on the screen. Starting with revenue, we generated 5.9 million in the first half, as you've already mentioned, a growth rate of 16% year-over-year. That's commensurate with the growth of trading customers in the period. So 16% increase up to 1,101 customers traded with us, and driven by the kind of continued expansion of both our sales team and therefore in turn our introducer network. As we've already kind of briefly touched on, we did see a macro-driven weakness due to the kind of tariff-related impacts on FX rates. And our USD-related business did perform below expectations in the first half. And particularly within that, impacted our high-net-worth individual segment, where some transactions and kind of wealth management kind of transactions were delayed due to the exchange rate highs. On the flip side, as James already covered, the UAE team performed above expectations in the first half, especially pleasing, I guess, and giving us confidence as we go into the second half, when we will see that integration with local payment rails, which should further fuel our expansion there in the second half. Our gross margin was impacted by revenue mix, so 62.7 for H1, which is down 3 percentage points year-over-year. Largely, I would say, due to that kind of high net worth USD-related business, which typically historically performed at a slightly better margin. So that, as a lower proportion of overall revenue, drove the decrease. Adjusted costs were up 30% year-over-year, 900K to 3.4 million. Kind of continuing the theme as in previous years, I guess, the really strong cost control around investments in people predominantly drove the majority of the increase of 500K of the 900K in people, particularly adding sales team in UK, Canada, and Dubai. A further 300K in fixed platform fees, particularly to support the car program, but also, as James mentioned, integrating with a local Canadian payment rail, those kind of fixed fees before we get beyond the kind of an initial period of generating revenue to cover those. That led to EBITDA in the first half of 300K at a 5% margin, down from 800K and a 16% margin in the prior year. As we've kind of headlined, this would be an investment year, and we're certainly seeing kind of the impact on our margins as a result of that, but standing us in good stead to drive out the operating leverage in future periods, as we kind of increase the throughput in those new initiatives and continue to expand in the UK as well.
And just that overseas portion, which has grown, obviously it's from a small base. Just in that first half, what sort of indicative percentages of your total revenue of that 5.9, and more broadly, longer terms, I don't know, 5 years aspirationally, where would you like to see that share of overseas revenue get to?
I mean, it's not something we split out at this time, Paul. As these revenue lines mature, we certainly may look to do that. But I think it's fair to say, over the long term or medium to long term, we would certainly kind of see the mix of as 50-50 UK and foreign jurisdictions.
Brilliant. Okay, then James, if we could just run through sort of the status on the commercialization strategy and also sort of new products. I know you mentioned sort of banking, agency banking, you've just been introduced. If you could just briefly explain what that actually means.
Yeah, absolutely. So that, again, a real highlight for us in the first half, the integration with a tier one bank. Agency banking effectively gives us our own sort code. So when someone's paying us and we're paying out, it's a Fensetta sort code that allows us to generate IBANs underneath that sort code. So ultimately, to all intents and purposes, fronting as a bank. We're sponsored in by a tier one bank, and that's no mean feat, because obviously partaking into the banking system, it's a huge responsibility, a massive amount of DD went into it, particularly sort of throughout 2024. Very few payments companies are able to get it. So it's a real endorsement for our processes, procedures, team, to be able to get it. And what ultimately, as a benefit to Fincentre and Fincentre shareholders, what does agency banking do? Ultimately, it allows us ultimately to be masters of our own destiny in terms of customer acquisition. So it allows us to take a wider number of customers, types of customers, etc. Because we have a very rigid and controlled risk process and onboarding process that our banking counterparties are happy with.
Yeah, and presumably it fits perfectly with your solutions, doesn't it? And that you should be seeing.
It spot on,
Yeah.
precisely,
Good.
precisely. And actually, as part of that, we are continuing to add counterparties to enable us to make sure that we're servicing all of our customers and potential customers in the most efficient way possible.
Yeah. And have you got any other sort of like products coming out, or is it a matter of just sort of lifting and shifting your proprietary platform into more overseas jurisdictions?
Ultimately, the key now is to make sure that what we've developed and what we've put in place is revenue generating and we're happy with. Conscious that we're still a relatively small company, and therefore, cost control is of paramount, to make sure that, ultimately it's our job to build a long-term sustainable business for shareholders and for employees. So trying to push the envelope too much, I think at this point it would be dangerous. Having said that, the platform or our proprietary platform, we're continuing to develop in terms of payments capability. Typically, for example, our speed of onboarding from last year to this year has dropped by from 3.6 hours down to 1.3 hours. So
Wow.
we're becoming far more data sensitive, and data is ultimately
Yeah.
king in this game, in most industries, and we're becoming far more data sensitive and really pushing as much as we can do with our current platform and making sure that it's absolutely best in class, fit for purpose for the coming years.
Yeah. And just on that onboarding, I know you've got a number of customers who have now joined the Fincentre platform, but haven't yet transacted. Just as a, what sort of, like, how many of that? Because you've obviously got 1,100 active customers.
And just to clarify, Paul, active is a customer that has transacted with us in the last 12 months. So they
Right.
must
Okay.
have transacted to be classified as active.
So how many have you got? How many inactive customers? You've got people who have basically joined in the
Oh.
last sort of 6 months, but still too, because they've been put off by the, say, the disruption.
So ultimately, customers that haven't transacted, we've got thousands.
Oh,
So
okay.
ultimately, and that's not within the last few months, ultimately we have customers that onboard, transact with us, and they may not do anything for 2 years. So we don't, so many businesses treat those as active customers. We don't. We're far more conservative about it. So which, if you compare our active customer numbers to others, you might think, oh, that's quite low. But actually, we're very, very conservative with the way we treat active customers,
Yeah,
or
okay.
the way we classify them.
Okay, good. Excellent.
We did see, I think you're hinting at, Paul, something we mentioned
Yeah.
in an earlier training update. We did see an increase in kind of applications at the end, or sorry, activations at the end of H2, albeit they didn't necessarily transfer into active customers in the way we classify them, as we would that previously have seen that conversion rate, and that was kind of driven by that macro impact, as we've already mentioned.
Good. Okay. A great segue into sort of like the future investments, Judy, in terms of you just talk us through that and what you're planning, and also how that impacts, your cash going forward.
Yeah, sure. I'll probably start on the 2025 or H1 cash, just to cover that off. So, operating cash flow of 0.4 million in the first half, again continuing our strong conversion from adjusted EBITDA of 300K. We deployed 400K in CapEx, mostly around agency banking, as James discussed. which will facilitate effectively expansion of our service to both new and existing customers kind of in future periods. We will see that capital spend increase slightly in the second half as we kind of particularly integrate with our local payment provider in the UAE to further expand that offering and accelerate revenue growth there, and also add in additional payment rails, particularly to support the solutions line. So as I say, kind of CapEx for overall for 2025, around 1 million, so kind of a slightly 60-40 weighting to the second half on that. Overall, for the first half, we saw an outflow of 148K. That kind of took our half year ending cash position to 2.4 million, or a net cash position of 2 million after taking away the 2 million loan note. That loan note, as you will recall, is due for repayment in August 2026. But it is held by our majority or our largest shareholder and our Chief Commercial Officer. And I don't think he'll mind me saying that as a result, he is therefore flexible on payment terms, albeit we haven't addressed that formally with him at this stage. But it is fair to say we are slightly behind on our cash generation aspirations, predominantly due to that macro impact. So as we look to capitalize on the opportunities that we've got in front of us, we will potentially need to kind of call on that flexibility slightly.
Yeah. Your net cash at the end of H1 was 0.4 million.
That's correct.
That's it.
Yeah,
great.
That's correct.
And in terms of going forward, the expansion overseas, is there any going to be requirement for regulatory capital there?
Not regulatory capital. We're done with our jurisdictions that we've got in play right now. I think the further additions in costs that we'll see will continue that theme of being headcount predominantly related, and specifically sales headcount. We really are reaping the benefits of those investments we made really in 2024 on the back end, and those kind of AI-driven AML kind of functionality that we invested last year. So not just on those great kind of onboarding stats that James mentioned, but it also has meant that we've been able to kind of focus our headcount additions purely on revenue generating heads. So that's really good as we go into kind of 2025, H2 and beyond.
Yeah. And then just overall in the H2 outlook for full year 2025.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that we are that macro softness we saw in the first half is continuing to have an impact in the second. We are seeing the business kind of improve definitively up on the impact that we saw April to June. But it's fair to say it's not returned as fast as we had originally anticipated back in July. So we're now taking a cautious approach on 2025. Full year revenue, expecting that to be around 11% year-over-year growth rate. But I think it's important to know, as James already mentioned, our revenue diversification really going into 2026 is in a much improved state and something that has put the business on a much more kind of stable footing. Beyond this year, we may remain extremely confident really in the growth prospects of the business, particularly in the UK, supported by solutions as we really grow that out, supported by the investments we're making in counterparty relationships, and obviously supported by the UAE, which we've already said has performed extremely well to date. Really excited by when we get a kind of a full service local offering in Q4 of this year, and obviously Canada and the card program as well. So really confident about future growth. Unfortunately, this year impacted a little bit by macro impacts that were unforeseen.
Yeah. Well, I'd take 11% like-for-like growth any day of the week, particularly when your shares are only on 1.2 times EV sales.
Indeed.
So they're very, very reasonable. Just turning then to closing remarks, James, and I suppose you could just say a few words in terms of the long-term picture for the company and how it's still, or if it is, on track for its, you know, where it aims to get to in the medium term.
Yeah, absolutely. So short-term, you know, I think the resilience we've shown in terms of the diversification really endorses the strategy we've taken over the last couple of years for certain. You know, the mix of business between corporate and individual has definitely paid dividends. Longer term, we're very, very excited about the geographical expansion, Dubai, Canada. There will be others, but not immediately. Again, increase in product set. So we're extremely enthusiastic, and you know, I'm very, very confident that we will meet our goals and create significant shareholder value. And as you said, Paul, you know, the shares currently are not trading on a particularly taxing multiple.
Now, just to put that into comparison for investors, typically a high, a fast-growing fintech business will be on sort of 2 to 4 times sales. So at 1.2, it looks very, very, very reasonably priced.
Exactly, and also bear in mind what we do have, which is unusual, is multiple regulatory licenses and operational centres, which again, in its own right, is significantly valuable.
Yeah. Well done, guys, on the double-digit top-line growth, and very much looking forward in touching base again in the next couple of months.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.